Over the course of my adult life, I've often thought wistfully that I wish I'd had the opportunity to grow up in a farming family. Alas, such was not my lot in life. I had many friends that came from farming families, and it seemed to me like a pretty super cool lifestyle, with a lot of time spent outdoors. I had the good fortune to help a number of them on their farms at various points over my teenage years. My dad did not come from a farming family, and to my knowledge had zero interest in farming. My mom did grow up in a farming family, and she hated it. She couldn't wait to get off the farm. And I'll say this, if you're not born into it, you're probably not getting into it at a later stage in life, short of coming into a whole lot of money to finance such a venture. The part of Kansas I'm from grows a lot of different crops, with corn, soybeans, and milo being common staples. However, hands down the most common crop is wheat, so much so that Kansas has been called the breadbasket of the world. I was blessed for a number of years, during my Kansas years sandwiched by my Alaska years, to help a friend with wheat harvest each summer. It was a hoot. It definitely reinforced my thoughts about farming. One thing I've always thought was cool is the similarities between the Kansas wheat harvest and the commercial and subsistence salmon seasons here around Bristol Bay. And one of the key targets for subsistence fishermen, at the moment, are Chinook salmon. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. So, about some of those similarities first. The wheat harvest usually happens from mid-June through the early stages of July. A great deal of what happens, and just when it happens, is predicated on the weather. For those of you not in the know, the Great Plains states can be a bit fickle when it comes to weather. Dry, scorching, triple-digit days one moment, and creek-filling downpours with golf ball-sized hail or larger the next. The window to get in the harvest is a very narrow one. Wait too long, and it starts dropping its grain. Too soon, and the moisture content will be too high for the farmer to make any money on it. In fact, a light morning dew can add enough moisture to wipe out a half day's work waiting for it to dry. And one thing is a certainty. Irrespective of whether the weather cooperates or not, the farmers are never happy with wheat prices, and often justifiably so. Does that sound like any kind of schedule that folks go through around here? They both happen at about the same point on the calendar, last for about the same length of time, are often strongly influenced by the weather, and have a big impact on the people tied to them. Both can also have fluctuations in price that get old-timers reminiscing about the good old days, when prices were much, much higher. If you've ever created some kind of sandwich out of salmon and bread, it's not inconceivable that the fish came from the bay and the bread came from Kansas wheat. Again, in my mind, it's always seemed kind of uncanny how much alike two such separate things can be. We are blessed in the fact that good solid numbers of each of the five types of Pacific salmon call Bristol Bay home. Today, let's take a look at the largest of those five, and one that, for a lot of residents, tops their winter freezer wish list, the Chinook, or should I say king salmon. Again, kings are the largest of the five. The current state sport fishing record is 97 pounds, 4 ounces, though kings over 100 pounds have been caught by other means. That 97-pound Leviathan was caught in the Kenai River back in 1985. The Kenai River kings are in a class all their own. Proof of this can be seen in the fact that they even have their own separate category for trophy angling awards, with regards to those available through the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Kings in most parts of the state are somewhat smaller, and that's certainly true for those around Bristol Bay. For the folks around here I talk to, fish up to 50 pounds or even a little over are not all that uncommon. Probably somewhere between 25 and 35 pounds would actually be about average for our area, and they can be found at every size down to the relatively diminutive jacks, which are small kings that mature after only one season in the ocean, and are smallish as a result. Kings, like other salmon, are a very silvery fish when they first come back from the oceans and re-enter the river systems. As bright as a new dime is the way I heard one angler refer to them. They have a bluish to olive back, silver sides, and a white belly, which is pretty much the case with all sea-run salmon. One characteristic that sets them apart is their spotting. They have irregular spotting that actually looks more like little short squiggles. This spotting is found across the back and ends just above the lateral line. The head, dorsal fin, and caudal fin, or tail, is also spotted. However, spots on the head are round, and those on the dorsal fin and tail are oval-shaped. The tail spots are found on both the upper and lower lobes. When you get a chance to look in their mouths, you'll notice that kings have a black gum line. Spawning colors can vary according to location and age of the fish. In general, the body takes on a reddish coloration, and this can darken quite heavily. Males develop more colors than females. One of the prettiest fish I've ever caught was a spawning male on the Middle Fork of the Good News River, seemingly a long time ago. That fish was about average in size, maybe 3 feet or so, and something like 20 pounds. It had a completely brick-red body, though the upper third had a gray overcast to it. The cheeks were olive bronze, and the lower fins, as well as the rear third of the tail, was a deep yellow. The spots had darkened and stood out against this colorful background. It made for a wonderful photo before its release. Kings, like other salmon, are anadromous, spending their adult life at sea and returning to freshwater to spawn. They're typically 3 or 4 years old when they return to spawn, with their age varying by location. They dig out gravel nests called reds on stream bottoms, and this is where the eggs are laid and fertilized. The eggs remain in the gravel and hatch the following spring. The young hang around in fresh water until their second spring, at which time they make their way out to the ocean. King salmon fry are pretty easy to identify by well-developed par marks on their sides, with the lateral line running neatly through them. Smolt, the returning to saltwater stage of development, have bright silver sides, and the par marks recede to mostly above the lateral line. Once out to sea, they mature and live in saltwater from 1 to 7 years. Before moving back into freshwater rivers and streams to spawn. Young kings feed on terrestrial and aquatic insects and various crustaceans. The adults feed primarily on other fish. Kings are a prey species for many animals. Some predators that seek out kings include sharks, orcas, and sea lions. Kings rely on freshwater streams, rivers, and estuaries to provide them with critical habitat during spawning and also during different stages of their development. In terms of range, across North America, they can be found from the Monterey Bay area of California to the Chukchi Sea area here in Alaska. On the Asian side, kings occur from Siberia south to Japan. In Alaska, they are generally abundant, from southeast Alaska to the Yukon River, though individual years can vary greatly, and their numbers have been down in some areas. Certainly, their numbers around Bristol Bay have been healthy, and they are a focus for a lot of subsistence and sport fishermen and women. In addition to where they're naturally found, populations have been established in other parts of the world. In 1967, the Michigan Department of Natural Resources planted kings in Lake Michigan and Lake Huron as a predator control species against an invasive called the alewife. Silvers were also planted, and both kings and silvers have thrived on alewives and spawned in many of the lake's tributaries. Both species were planted in the other Great Lakes based on the success of Huron and Michigan, and they have become popular sport fish targets. In fact, I have a buddy that goes up to Michigan every year to fish for kings. Kings were also introduced into the Patagonian waters of South America back in the 1930s and have established stable populations there. Historically, kings have always been highly prized by native peoples, both here in Alaska and all along the West Coast. They were a sought-after food fish during the Lewis and Clark expedition, as we know from their extensive journals. Meriwether Lewis opined that fresh kings tasted better than any other fish he had ever eaten. Certainly, Lewis's opinion is one that's shared by a lot of Bristol Bay residents. Kings, because of their size and quality as table fare, are the pinnacle species for many. Lodges fill up each summer with anglers hoping to score on a really big king. Subsistence users eagerly target them with their nets, with hopes for a full freezer. Best of wishes to those of you currently pursuing that very goal. And as you catch, cut, and package salmon, hoping for a big score in cooperative weather to get it done, keep in mind wheat farmers in Kansas are, at this very time, going through a very similar process. Different goals, different processes, more similarities than you might think. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.